Less Than 2000,
the podcast.
Today we got Darren Coyle joining us. Darren is a filmmaker. We actually made a film together called Chasing Sunshine, which he is the writer and director of, and it's a very funny movie. That's not what we're talking about today, though, because he may work in the industry, and he's a very talented individual. He produces television, but Darren also has a very unhealthy obsession with Back to the Future. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you guys. Hi, Chad and Adam. Thank you for having me on the show. This is awesome. I'm excited to talk about Back to the Future. Back to the Future came out in 1985. But just to say, like, just for me personally, like, I was 11 when I saw it, you know, when it came out. And it was one of the first movies that I watched and that, A, I loved and have seen it 100 times. But also, it was one of the first movies that I realized that there's actually stories behind the making of a movie. It's not just it doesn't just magically happen. There's lots of people and things that go into making a movie. And so it was one of the first movies that I loved that I found out, you know, the behind the scenes scoop, so to speak, on it. And ever since then, I've kind of, you know, just
had an unhealthy obsession with it.
Had an unhealthy obsession with it, I guess you could say, yeah.
Here's what I wanted to say. Is it possible to have an unhealthy obsession with this movie? This movie is great. As far as movies that you're going to be obsessed about, I mean, it's fairly wholesome, too. I mean, it's a healthy obsession, not unhealthy.
Well, I mean, we're going to dive deeper into the movie, but when you say a wholesome film, I do want to say the whole premise is his own mother in the past trying to date her own son. There is a level of weirdness to this that does go beyond. I mean, again, clouded under the nice little PG shell of not a lot of cursing and not a lot of graphic stuff. But, I mean, it is the premise of, like, my mom is hitting on me, and I know it.
The creators of this movie, Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, actually pitched it over 40 times, 4-0, 40 times, and were ultimately rejected all those times, mostly because of that, because they were like, wait, so this is a movie where a guy goes back in time and his mom falls in love with him, and like Disney was like, huge pass.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. Like, I mean, the pitch in and of itself does sound creepy. Like, when you say it out loud, like, wait a minute, it's weird.
What's funny to me is that it takes the 1984 The Terminator and takes that time loop of going back in time and, you know, sending your own father to come back to conceive you, taking that time loop and basically kind of using it but making an Oedipus complex to it. Very weird.
Bob Gale said that he got the idea for this around 1979, 1980. He was cleaning out some boxes in his parents' house, and he found his dad's high school yearbook. And he thought, if I were in high school with my dad, would I be friends with him? Like, would we be friends? And then he said that idea to Robert Zemeckis, and they were both like, well, maybe we do, like, a time travel story and put that to the test. So I know the whole thing with him and his mom kind of, you know, always takes a lot of the focus, but honestly, the core of the idea was actually about him and his dad.
And which, of course, we all know now, like, his dad was a peeping Tom, you know, kind of dork that nobody really liked, you know. And, of course, Michael J. Fox is just so dang cool as Marty McFly. So let's just start there. So, like, yeah, the dynamic of, like, oh, my God, this was my father? Like, how did he produce this?
Right, right.
While your own mother's falling in love with you.
Right. And I do want to take a moment here to recognize that Michael J. Fox actually was not the first Marty McFly. There were a lot of people that were on the list for Marty McFly to be cast as Marty McFly. Johnny Depp, Charlie Sheen, Fisher Stevens, Jason Gedrick, Chris Rydell, John Cusack, and Doug McKeon, just to name a few, were people that auditioned for the part. And ultimately, it went to Eric Stoltz. and they actually, you guys are nodding your heads, so I'm assuming you guys already know this, but like,
absolutely,
this is like, this
we
is like
do,
the worst kept secret.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like the worst kept secret where like, so they filmed the first 3 weeks with Eric Stoltz and he just wasn't working out. So Robert Zemeckis had to switch him out with Michael J. Fox.
Was it as I understand it, he played it too heavy. Like it was just, well, to use a word from the movie, heavy, man.
What's
like,
with all this heavy stuff? So heavy. What's with the future? You know, everything's heavy.
He's an excellent actor, but not as nearly as much of it. Just that natural boyish charm and like that just soft going, easy going, kind of disarming charm and cute smile. And just the way Michael J. Fox can kind of play comedy without being goofy, whereas Eric Stoltz, good actor, but I wouldn't even want to see this movie with him.
But Darren, I think you said you have an answer for that. The way he was playing it, what was wrong?
Oh yeah. So I mean, you're exactly right, Adam. He was playing it very straight, and like, and just it wasn't like the levity and comedy of the scenes just wasn't happening. Like he and Doc Brown just weren't jiving. It wasn't entertaining. And it wasn't funny, and it needed to have that aspect to it. And I mean, changing out your main character actor in the middle of a, you know, multi-million-dollar production is a huge deal and could get you fired. But he was just like, look, if we're going to make this movie, we've got to do it right. We gotta swap him
so
out.
So good. So glad he did.
So glad he did. But can you imagine being that actor? I've always said, like, imagine being the actor going around telling all your friends, I'm going to be Marty McFly in this massive blockbuster. And then you're normally, once the first check shows up, you know, you're pretty good. Not in this case. Fired 3 weeks in. They're going to reshoot the entire movie. And you've just gone around to everyone. Yep. I'm Marty McFly.
Well, and also, like, they actually, since they had already shot a bunch of the stuff, they only had to reshoot Marty's stuff. Mm-hmm. So they actually, like, went back to the scenes and only shot the Marty shots. So, like, there are some scenes in there that you're seeing over Marty's shoulder, and it might be Eric Stoltz's actual shoulder.
Wow. Didn't you say that Eric was actually, like, almost relieved when he got replaced? We were talking about this a while back.
Yeah, the way Robert Zemeckis describes it is that, and maybe this is just him assuaging his own guilt, but he said, you know, that he could tell from Eric's, obviously he told Eric face to face, and he could see in Eric's eyes a little bit of relief, just because I think he thought that Eric knew it wasn't quite working. And Eric was a little relieved that, like, you know, oh, great, this playing this role in this movie that may or may not bomb won't be my fault now.
Much better to be replaced, as embarrassing and humiliating as Chad pointed out, than to be the star of a massive bomb when you're that young, because he probably never would have been able to come back from it. And of course, he was never as big as Michael J. Fox, but he went on to have a good, solid career.
Yeah, I mean, nobody can look back and say he didn't have a good career. He had a good career. So Darren has a coffee table book, like one of those high-end coffee table books about Back to the Future. And I cannot wait to get back to L.A., one, to see you, but then two, to read that amazing book.
Yeah, what is it? Who wrote it? What's it called?
It's written by Michael Klasterin with Randall Adamaniuk. It looks like just kind of like a BS coffee table book to look at it, but it's got so much amazing stuff and so many amazing pictures and great stories. It's really in depth. There's a picture of Eric Stoltz right there. Look at that.
This is as close to a perfect movie as I think exists. I think on all fronts, it's damn near the absolutely perfectly made movie. It's got action, it's got adventure, it's got comedy, it's got groundbreaking effects. The musical score, I can't wait to talk about the score. I mean, everything about it is just, the script, everything is just ace. I can't really think of a better done movie overall.
Thank you. Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
Yeah, when Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, who's a script writer on his own, has written a bunch of Christopher Nolan's movies, was asked what's the perfect screenplay, he said Back to the Future. Now, I think it is actually of super interest in that what the movie you see, the movie as it exists, and the screenplay that I'm sure they made from the movie was not the screenplay they started shooting. When they started production, there was one major difference between the actual movie and the script they started shooting was the ending.
Yes.
The ending was supposed to be Marty McFly driving the DeLorean into the Nevada desert into a nuclear blast, because that was the only way they were going to get 1.21 gigawatts. They realized that that was going to be a very expensive thing to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they already had the Hill Valley, you know, town center set up in a back lot at Universal Studios. So one of the, it was either Bob Gale or Robert Zemeckis, I forget, while they were shooting the movie said, you know what? We could shoot the end right here. It'll be super cheap because we're already on the lot. And we just have a bolt of lightning hit the clock tower and blah, blah, blah. And that's how the whole bolt of lightning thing came into it. And so they scrapped the whole nuclear explosion thing for the lightning. And it was, honestly, it was a good story choice, mm-hmm. but they made the story choice because of the budget, basically.
That's crazy.
They probably would have kept the real ending.
Man, the clock tower, the lightning, just all that whole thing is just so iconic, and just what you think of when you think of Back to the Future. I can't even imagine it in Nevada.
Well, and not even just that, from the minute the film opens almost. Save the clock tower. I mean, the clock is in there the whole way through. It's a major plot point through the whole film. To imagine that being gone, or that it's a blast, is, whoa, it's mind-blowing.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show you that, like, you know, filmmakers don't have all the answers. They're not geniuses. They make decisions, you know, based on things other than creativity. But, like, now we all know this movie, and we all think that, wow, that's such a great through line, and blah, blah, blah. And, you, like you said, Chad, it's there from the beginning to the end, and all that. It's a great tie-in. But yeah, that was on day one of production. That was not the plan. You know,
it'd be interesting to see like the alternate universe version of this with Eric Stoltz and that ending. Cause with him playing it darker, I could see that ending kind of making sense in like a dark version of Back to the Future. It wouldn't be the perfect movie like this one is. That's for damn sure.
Also, like the question that the audience would be asking themselves is Marty McFly even going to survive this?
Sure.
Either he gets back to 1985 or he dies like a horrible death.
And then you don't have part two and three. If that happens, if he dies.
Yeah. No.
It's a one and done.
So was Spielberg just kind of the guy in this? Was he a real, you know, hands-on person at this point with this film?
Yeah.
This one is really doing his own stuff, and this was his vision and all that.
Yeah, Spielberg had Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and E.T. on his resume at this time. And he was kind of a mentor for Robert Zemeckis. So when Zemeckis brought him this idea, Spielberg was on board from day one and was just like, yeah, let's find a home for this. And they pitched it around for years, and no one wanted to make it. It wasn't until 1984 that Robert Zemeckis directed Romancing the Stone. And that was a huge hit. So all of a sudden, Robert Zemeckis is kind of like the it boy, and he can, you know, he can direct a successful movie. Now the studios are like, you have this time travel movie you want to make? okay, maybe we'll try making that.
That's crazy.
Another thing about the screenplay and how, like, quote unquote perfect it is, the original version also had the, you know, so the flux capacitor and all that stuff, the like secret ingredient, the thing that really made it go, was going to be Coca-Cola. And it was going to be because they would discover it because Marty would like spill Coca-Cola onto it. And that's what would make it go. They scrapped that in favor of, like, you know, plutonium or whatever.
Again, that alternate universe version is just funny to think about. Yeah. Eric Stoltz and Coke and nuclear explosions and all that.
Yeah. I'd see that movie.
I would see it, yeah.
Well, the question exists, all right, so obviously the three of us really love this movie. Have any of us ever met someone that either hated the movie or just was like, you know, kind of ho-hum about it?
Never.
I mean,
everybody I know loves it.
Well, I mean, officially, my answer is going to be no. Everybody's always loved it. My wife, I could make the argument that she's ho-hum about it because she would say, that's a boy movie. So, like, I don't think she ever saw it all the way through.
For anybody listening, since this is a podcast, you should have just seen the looks on Darren and my faces when he said that about the boy movie, because it's not a boy movie. It's got the romance stuff to it. I mean, there's women are prominent characters. They're not just objects. They have agency. And I think it's a movie for everyone. It's a
no,
family
I totally
friend,
agree.
Young,
it's
old,
a, it's a, totally a family film.
So I wanted to go back real quick, and Darren, I wanted to get your history with the movie, just personal history for a second, because that conversation just sort of reminded me. You know, Chad talked about how it's not necessarily wholesome when you really think about it, and you know, people liking it or not liking it. As a kid, of course I loved it. I mean, it had time travel, it had comedy, it had all this, you know, riding on the back of a, you know, skateboarding by holding onto the back of somebody's truck, all this really cool stuff. And you appreciate it on that level, a boy, as a boy in the 80s. But it wasn't until after even law school, and I watched it in my late 20s, that I realized how brilliant of a film it is. So getting to watch it over time and yourself changing your perspective on it, I mean, first of all, the first time I ever watched it was in Chad's van. His van had a TV. I know that sounded creepy. You should have just seen their look.
The yes, van your maroon van? Yeah, we had that huge maroon van that came with a pillow. It was like the biggest van you could get.
Yes. And you had a VCR. We could have watched it inside, but for whatever reason, maybe it was occupied. We watched it out there, and I was just blown away by
And we weren't
by
moving.
How
you
great
do realize this was the old school, like, 9-inch tube TV. I mean, it was 9 inches big.
Oh, yeah. Smaller than the screen I'm looking at you with right now.
I guess I'm aging myself a little bit here. So am I to understand that neither of you actually saw it in the movie theater?
Did not see it in theater.
Oh, hell no.
I saw it in the back of Chan's van.
I was I was five. First time I saw it was on TV. So I saw the movie first.
Did Chad get handsy that night?
No comment.
We were sitting in separate seats. I will comment. We were in separate seats.
Oh, right.
But yes, he did get handsy.
Well, I didn't get handsy. You know what? That's not cool.
Well, what about the sequels? Did you see the sequels in the theater?
Did see that in the theaters, yes.
Yes.
And the third one sucks. Come on. We got to be honest. The third one sucks.
It's not as good.
Is there anything redeeming about it? Just before we get into your experience, I want to hear your childhood stories with it and everything. But I got to go right there, because is there anything redeeming at all about Back to the Future 3?
Well, all right. Well, here is my take on the sequels. I mean, movie sequels are always just a money grab. Like, they're just basically rehashing the original. And in this case, both the sequels are rehashing the original story. They just do it in the future and in the past. So having said that, the sequels are fun, but I don't think they have any real artistic merit or movie-making merit to them.
Except for Back to the Future 2.
2 had some really cool stuff in it, memorable, cool stuff. I mean, it's better than
3. He went
to the future! A hell of a lot better.
Come on, he went to the future! That was freaking dope!
Darren, I want an answer. I am pinning you down. Give me something redeeming from the third one. It's not Doc Brown's love story, I'll tell you that much.
No.
We didn't need to see that at all.
Yeah, we did. We needed to see him evolve. Because he realized there was more to life than
no,
just
no, no, no,
science.
No,
we got
not.
The All right, so the one redeeming quality I can think of in the third one is we got to hear Michael J. Fox do an Irish accent.
Okay, yeah, there you go. As his uncle or whatever? As his great-great uncle or something like that?
Yeah. Because, you know, Mick Fly, obviously that's an Irish name. So, of course, he came from Irish immigrants.
That was good. I liked ZZ Top as the band. Because remember, ZZ Top did a song for that movie soundtrack, and they were playing the band with their beards and everything like that.
Yeah, which goes to show how stupid that movie is. Like little things like that is it's just like why is this in there? This is like a wink to the audience, and there's like winks to the audience all over the place. Like he says, "My name is Clint Eastwood," and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And like there's all kinds of winks, and it just having one or two of those in the movie is fine. If you're getting one of those every 2 minutes, it's like, guys. Did we run out of ideas, like, for the story for this movie?
What about the second one? I mean, is that okay, in your opinion?
The second one, I think, has some merit because in the time travel genre, if you will, I like the alternative universe where Biff is a billionaire and he owns the casino. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he's married to, and he's dating his mom. And clearly he's got to, like, fix this screwed up timeline that he's helped to create. I think that is cool.
See, that's what I liked about number two is that it took the old premise and it gives you a piece of that, but it's completely screwed up now. You get the future, you get the past, you get alternate timelines. So two is way more different than one. Three just puts you in the past and it's f-ing stupid. But two, you get the future. You got Jaws 34 and the 3D. You know, hologram.
Oh, yeah. I love
John's
the 80s nostalgia cafe. The way when they go to the 80s nostalgia cafe, that was hilarious. The Cubs winning the World Series.
It's called a dust jacket.
But do you remember that? I mean, you mentioned how sequels are like a cash grab of the most one and they just churn it out. Well, the sequel was so churned out. You guys remember the end of Back to the Future? There was the scene, opening scene from Back to the Future 2 already. With the hover, you know, Doc Brown picks him up and the
that's actually
the hovering,
not true.
Flying one.
That was how they really ended that movie, right? And then it did well and they got greenlit for 2 and 3 back to back. So they shot 2 and 3 back to back. But they didn't know they were going in to the second one. The to be continued, I thought, was arbitrary. It was just sort of like, where are they going?
They had
now?
The hovering flying
DeLorean,
right?
Basically, they were like, well, we hope we get a sequel. I mean,
if you would have just said that, Chad, I wouldn't have believed it. But I do trust Darren on that. So he's got the book.
You know, you
so.
Never trust me, man. I swear to God.
You know, it's funny because I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this, who is roughly 10 years younger than me. And I mentioned that I was doing this podcast. We were talking about Back to the Future. And he mentioned the sequels. And I was like, well, you know, we both know that the sequels are bullshit. And he was like, I actually love the sequels. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you have to understand. I saw all, by the time I was cognizant and watching these movies, they were all three of them were already out. So it wasn't like I saw the first one and loved it and had to wait a couple of years to see the second one. And, you know, and the first one was endeared to me by like waiting for the sequel. He was like, they were already out. So I just like watched all three of them at the same time. So in his brain, all three of them are kind of the same, you know, big movie.
It's one big movie. One big movie is what it is. And from that perspective, that's kind of cool because you really can watch all three. Last time I saw all three was I was sitting like on the chair in front of you. I watched all three at your house, like your apartment, like two years ago.
In front of him?
He has a chair in front of you. You can't see what he's, you know. Sitting, but anyway, yeah, see, I sat in that chair.
You talked about us in the van, so
yeah, that's
I just
true.
Wondering about this.
no, thanks for turning the camera.
Is he giving
around.
You a back rub or what?
No, anyway, he was asleep. I was sipping on a scotch, and I happened to get into all three movies. I watched all three in two nights, and so I get that thought process because I personally really liked the second one. I was not as big of a fan of the third.
Ugh.
I really liked the second one because it took what the first one did so amazingly and perfect and then developed the story even bigger around that past event. I personally liked that. I was also like 9 when it came out. So I probably would have liked anything.